Good afternoon. It's 5 minutes past one. The House Judiciary Committee is in session. In attendance are Representative Gruenberg, Representative Herron, Representative Ramirez, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Holmes, Representative Gatto, and Representative Lynn has just joined us. We are taking up House Bill 298. In the room, available for questions are Mr. Sabodney. Also online for questions are Doug Moody and Kathy Monfrida. And we also, for the benefit of members, we also have Jeffrey Mittman from the ACLU, who has missed the window of opportunity for public testimony. But because we respect his point of view, even though I rarely side with him, he is certainly available and an excellent resource and available for us for any members that have questions for him. Before we go into amendments today, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Sandy, but I had an extraordinary visit with Sandy Samaniego last Thursday, and I'd like Sandy to just spend a couple of minutes to come before the committee and give us a brief job description and resume. Sandy is the position that we talked about with the Department of Public Safety. She is the executive director that has been added as a czar and a coordinator. And No, you're welcome, Sandy. I thought Sue Stancliffe is... Sandy, please come and join us and sit down. Please come and join us and sit down. So apparently it's not the new position that has been asked for. So, Sandy, we are delighted to have you. The card I have says Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Executive Director, so of CDVSA, which is... and you're new to this position, is that right?
That is correct.
If you'll introduce yourself for the record, just tell us a little bit about yourself. We're delighted to have you in the room.
Thank you. My name is Sandy Samaniego, and I was born and raised in Juneau. I got involved in this field first as serving on the board of both the local aware shelter and the batterers intervention program, not to be confused with an anger management program. Later on, I moved to Fairbanks, and eventually became the director, the executive director of the shelter, the victims program there, and I served in that position for 4 years and got called back to Juneau by the ocean and and see Alaska Heritage Institute, and was there the Sea Alaska Heritage's, what was my title? Chief of Operations and Development for 8 years. This position became open, and I have a great passion for this field. I felt like I had a full tank of gas to give to these issues, and so I applied and was selected, for which I'm very thankful.
Thank you. Are there any questions? I'm sorry, and I didn't mean to mislead members. This isn't the new position that's being created by DPS. This is simply the new executive director for the Council on Domestic Violence and Assault. Are there any questions for Sandy, who's just beginning her journey of trying to make lives, families, and communities safer across the state of Alaska? Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sandy, thank you for taking that responsibility. Huge job. Huge job, and we appreciate that. What has been the biggest surprise to you since you've been in this position?
Through the chair, I was surprised, overwhelmed, and excited by the governor's interest in this field. To be truthful, it turned out to be a very exciting time.
And through the chair, is the abuse level or the situations you're dealing with, are they higher, lower, more extreme, more? Are we making progress with the things we're doing?
Through the chair, I believe we are definitely making progress through the things we're doing. Just, I haven't had an opportunity yet to become fully acquainted with what the issues are and how it has grown. I do know that that demands on the services are higher than they have been in the past. But the sheer awareness of the issue and on people's abilities to talk about it in an intelligent way tell me that there has definitely been progress in the 10 years since I've worked in this field.
And then can you just give us a little rundown on your educational background?
Through the chair, I attended Catholic school here through my grade school years, went to the Juno Douglas High School, and then continued on through college at Merrillhurst in Oregon. It's a very fine school. And I have a double baccalaureate in management and social sciences.
Great.
And after that time, I spent some time at the University of Alaska here in Juneau, working on public and business administration master's courses.
Thank you.
We are glad you are on the job. Any other questions for San Diego? for San Diego? No, thank you. Godspeed to you. We appreciate your work.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a brief at ease. All right, today we are going to proceed with amendments, and we have 14 of them. We're delighted to have you with us, Mr. Sabodny. I've also asked Jane Pearson to come before us and help us go through these amendments. We have amendments to be offered by Representative Gruenberg, Representative Holmes, myself, and then I also will be offering amendments for the Department of Law, some of which I agree with and some of which I may have issues with, and I will offer the amendment and then speak to whether I'm for it or opposed to it as the case may be. I believe we've got 14 amendments before us today,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Gruenberg.
I sort of was a little confused on what you said was going to be happening with Mr. Mittman. Is he solely relying on his memo, which I've just received, or is he going to give us any testimony?
He missed, Mr. Representative Gruenberg, Mr. Mittman missed the opportunity for public testimony, which was last week.
No, I understand that. Were you going to extend him the courtesy of allowing him to testify today? I don't even know if he's available or if he's online. I don't know.
We have Mr. Mittman available to answer questions today.
May I inquire?
We haven't taken up any of the amendments. Our process for today was to take up amendments.
Okay.
And so I would be more comfortable if you would make inquiries and use Mr. Mittman as an excellent reference as the amendments arise.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
I mean, I just didn't know if there was anything that he cared to add that's not in his memo, because whatever, it doesn't make any difference. I'll certainly do whatever you wish, Mr. Chair.
Do members have the memo?
Yeah, I just got it a moment ago.
Okay.
I think.
All right. The first amendment before us is going to be amendment number one is going to be A.7 Luckup. And Mr. Jerry Luckup will be with us, Jane, did you say shortly or?
Representative Ramirez, he is online, and if we need him, he will be here. Just give a call out.
All right, so Mr. Luckup is listening and can come over if we require him. So the members have A.7.
I have to find it. Right. You're not taking it from the top in the pile. You're going by some other order.
There should be a first one in the packet.
I think that there should be a packet of amendments.
Yes, it's the third page in.
Third page?
Yeah, mine's my thing's way down. Eight, seven is
eight. I have a number five.
Yeah.
There
you go.
It's three pages. Yeah, I just don't know.
Brief it easy.
Oh, I see.
All right, we're back on the record. Amendment number one is going to be A.7. It is a new section 5. We have us. We have before us amendment number one. Hearing no objection, amendment number one.
We have to move, somebody has to move it.
Don't we need to move the amendment first?
Yes. I move amendment number one.
I'm going to object so we can get it explained.
All right. Thank you. Representative Grunberg objects. Jane, would you take us through amendment number one, please?
Eddie's, please.
Yeah, we're taking Eddie's.
You're there.
All right, so amendment number one, A dot seven, lockup, is, it addresses a new section five, and Jane, do you want to take us through this?
Chair Ramos and the committee, amendment A7 deals with virtual child pornography, and we worked really hard with Senator Fred Dyson's office on this amendment. And the proposed amendment amends AS 1161-125, distribution of child pornography, and AS 1161-127, possession of child pornography, to enable the apprehension and prosecution of distributors of digitally manipulated child pornography. The intent of this amendment is to confront the latest turn in the scourge of child pornography, which is computer-generated images of children engaged in sex acts. It's proving to be a formidable hurdle to police and prosecutors. In such cases, it is difficult to determine whether the victim is a minor child depicted in the image, is real, is computer-generated, or is a computer-generated image. An example is an image of a real child's face superimposed on the body of an animated character engaged in sex acts. The child porn websites are proliferating the internet, and they're dedicated to alternate reality, child sex. This industry is thriving, due in part to the great difficulty it poses to police and prosecutors to prove the identity of a victim, and improving the images are not mere fantasy. This amendment criminalizes the distribution of computer-generated films and images involving children in sexual acts. It also makes arrest and prosecution of a defendant possible when the victim is not identifiable. In 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in a 7-2 decision and upheld the PROTECT Act of 2003, which was an attempt to shut down a flourishing trade in child pornography on the internet. The act barred not only the exchange of pictures depicting children in sexually explicit poses, but also outlawing any attempt to convince another person that the pictures were of real children. The majority of justices said that Congress struck the right balance in the statute. Scalia wrote in his opinion that child pornography harms and debases the most defenseless of our citizens. Both the state and the federal governments have sought to suppress it for many years, only to find it proliferating through a new medium on the internet. And this amendment would try to deals with that, and it would outlaw virtual child porn and its distribution.
Jane, this is new law, I gather. Is it, we're kind of right on the edge with Alaska statutes in outlawing this particular version of pornography. Is that correct?
Chair Ramos, that is true. This would be very much on the edge of what could or could not be done.
Mm-hmm. Representative Grunberg, would you like to pose any questions to Mr. Mittman with regard to this material?
I will yield for a moment. I'm looking for a memo that I got here, I'm sorry, I've got so much stuff.
Well, I will pose the question to him. Mr. Mittman, are you there? Can you weigh in on your thoughts with regard to amendment number one, please?
I am, Chair Ramos. I appreciate the opportunity. I apologize. I do not have the language of the amendment in front of me. I would say generally, if the amendment is narrowly drawn such that the focus is on obscene material, which is a standard that has been established by the U.S. Supreme Court, that essentially is in line with constitutional limitations and civil liberties concerns. The concern is when an amendment would be overly broadly written so as it would not be limited to obscene material. At that point, you then begin to brush up against First Amendment concerns. Well, for example, non-obscene material, which is purely fantasy is purely drawn, has no relation to an actual child, really runs afoul of First Amendment protections.
Thank you, Representative Bellstrom.
Thank you, Jeffrey, for being online. It's nice to hear your voice again. So I'm just going to be very blunt. In the statement that you just made, do I understand you correctly to say that it would be okay for cartoon characters to have sex?
Through the chair, I appreciate the opportunity to answer the question, and thank you, Representative Dahlstrom. Good to speak with you. Clearly, the ACLU does not support pornography or, I should say, anything that harms children. What we are focused on is that the laws are appropriately drafted so that they protect children while not limiting First Amendment rights. So, for example, if you had cartoon characters engaging in sexual activity, if they were obscene, and this is a known standard to the courts, that is already illegal and can be reached by existing laws. If they were not obscene and you are essentially criminalizing protected First Amendment activity, you're running up against constitutional limitations. I hope that answered the question. It's a fairly challenging area of the law.
It did answer it, and I think what I hear you saying is that it's, well, I'll look into that some more. I'm not sure what the definition of obscene sex acts is when it pertains to children. In my mind, just showing what someone would consider a normal, healthy sex act for an adult is obscene to show to a child.
Can I expand?
I've got other questions, Mr. Mittman.
Sure.
Representative Herron, and then Holmes, and then Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope I already have the answer, but this amendment is for human or human-like.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was hoping I could just read Mr. Mittman about four lines of this. Mm-hmm. The amendment does not appear to use the actual term obscene, but they do require that the depiction, it would have to be that, and I'm quoting the language now, the average individual applying contemporary community standards would find that the depiction taken as a whole appeals to the prurient interest, and a reasonable person would find that the depiction taken as a whole lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. Mr. Mittman, does that help you at all with your reading of the amendment?
Through the chair, Representative Hope, thank you. And that, in fact, was the comments I wanted to expand. That is very close to the obscenity standards the courts have laid down, and it sounds as if this amendment has, in fact, been narrowly drawn so as to focus purely on obscene matter, which, again, is intended to appeal to the prurient interest and has no artistic value. And that is, the courts have found that those sorts of materials do not receive First Amendment protections, and that would be the narrow concern of the ACLU.
Thank you, and I'll remind members that these amendments were drafted by Mr. Luckup, who is in the back of the room and is very familiar with the U.S. Constitution, and so we would presume that he was careful in drafting all of these to protect our cumulative and individual constitutional rights. Representative Gatto and then Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mittman, if we had child cartoon characters engaged in sex, how would we determine the age of a cartoon character? Because the author could easily say those are all 18-year-old and above characters who have dressed down to look younger. Would that create a conflict if we're using, and I guess by virtual maybe that includes cartoon characters? How do we determine the age of whether or not that character is now involved in what this bill attempts to eliminate?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I think, in fact, you raise why this is a problematic area to legislate in, and why the focus on obscene materials is probably the better standard as opposed to a more broad attempted a definition of pornography. Under the obscene standard, where it's a purely fantastical image, a created image that's not of an actual child, you don't need to get to those questions of, is this pretend image a child or not? What you really are focusing on is whether this is protected First Amendment content or not. Because you're right, it is, in fact, very difficult to determine these questions.
Thank you. And I'll remind members that Mr. Sabodny is here, Mr. Luckup is here, and that Mr. Mittman is not the only expert in the room, nor does it sound that he is in opposition to this amendment. So we've got 14 amendments to move through and in the next 90 minutes.
I have a question.
Representative Gruenberg.
I'd ask, I don't know if the staff, is Mr. David Horowitz on the phone?
No.
Okay. Through the chair, Mr. Mittman, you think this has some constitutional problems, I gather?
Based on through the chair, Representative Gruber, based on the information that was read to me by Representative Holmes, it appears that this amendment was narrowly tailored to reach only obscene material, which the U.S. Supreme Court has determined is not entitled to First Amendment protections. So pending further review, it appears that there would not be constitutional infirmities with the amendment as drawn.
I have one question for Ms. Pierce.
Yes.
Has any other state adopted similar, enacted a similar statute?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, I believe they have. Most other states have a definition of obscene, which is what I was discussing with Attorney Richard Sabatini, and we do not in our statute.
No, I understand that. But my question through the chair was doing these cartoon characters and virtual representations. Have other states enacted something like this?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, I have not done research on this. The Supreme Court decision was a 2008 decision, so I imagine most states have tried to do this, so I imagine there are.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sue, can you pop up here? Representative Holmes has a question for the Alaska State Troopers. I don't think we have anybody. I don't have down on our list anybody from the troopers. Let's see if it's something that Sue can handle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sue, this is more of a general question since we are kind of talking about adding something new into our laws. Do you have any idea how often our state troopers might come across this type of material, how big a problem this is considered to be from your agency, to your department's standpoint?
Certainly. For the record, my name is Sue Stancliffe, Special Assistant and Legislative Liaison for Department of Public Safety. Through the chair, Representative Holmes, when I toured through the cyber crimes unit, it was a big issue. There are a number of entries, if you will, logged through the computers that we're able to see. Granted, we don't have access to who that is, but we can see an IP address and see the child pornography, and it is a problem, yes.
We also have Ron Tinsdale. Tinsdale is with us from Anchorage Police Department. Ron, are you with us?
Yes, I am, and for the record, it's Ron Tidler, T-I-D-L-E-R.
Tidler, sorry, we wrote your name down incorrectly. I apologize. Sergeant Ron Tidler. Would you respond to Representative Holmes's question, please?
Yes, and again, it's Detective Sergeant Ron Tidler, Anchorage Police Department Cyber Crimes Unit. I'm also the commander for the Alaska Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. Through the chair, in response to the question, the issue is something that we come across, and I would say to the percentage of almost 95% of our searches, we are coming across large collections of what is described as animation pornography. The images we're seeing are very graphic, and it is clear to the common person looking at this that this is a small child being sexually assaulted by adult males. The information is out there for anybody if they want to go and research it. Just by doing a Google search, you're going to see these images popping up. The question that comes in our minds and through our interviews of these suspects are, why do these suspects have these large collections? And routinely when we're talking to these suspects, they are telling us that it fuels their needs and their desires for the fantasy aspect of sexually abusing children.
Representative Holmes, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I guess I have two different thoughts on this that I was just would ask the sergeant and Sue if they could weigh in on. One is, on the one hand, that seems very disturbing to me, and like this might be a very good tool, and I'd be interested in finding out whether the opinion of the department and the APD on that. On the other hand, if there are graphic depictions of kids, maybe that is taking the place and reducing actual, I mean, if there's not an actual victim of a child. I mean, my first priority is to protect the children. This is not an actual child. I find it very disturbing, so I'm sort of trying to figure out the balance here about is this a great tool that we can get to people who are also who are doing bad things? I guess I'm just sort of weighing this in my mind, because if they have this picture, then they don't have the real pictures where there's an actual child victim. I'm just trying to work through that in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Holmes, I would defer that question, whether it was helpful or not, mm-hmm. to the sergeant.
Okay.
As far as the department's position on that, obviously he's APD and unable to speak to that. Mm-hmm. I will get back with you on that question.
Thank you.
But we do know that there is a problem with it out there, and when we're looking at the amount of cases and the most egregious, so if you put them in two columns, you've got cartoon characters mm-hmm. and then real child exploitation. Needless to say, our efforts are always going to be toward the real mm-hmm. Child exploitation cases. So, yes, we would go after those first.
Okay.
Is this a factor in it? It could be, sure. But like I said, I'll have to get back with you as far as the department's perspective and opinion.
From the chair's point of view, to synthesize your argument, is it a methadone or is it a gateway?
Mm-hmm.
I think
that
is
would be accurate, Mr. Chair.
It likely may be both, but I think that our laws are written not only to protect individuals and their constitutional rights, but also to protect the vulnerable. And so for those for whom it is a gateway, that's enough of a push for me to want to pass this amendment, even though it would exclude those for whom it's the equivalent of a methadone program. At least that's my point of view. And will drive the way that I vote. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. Just a question in line with what the chairman was asking the last time we heard the bill. Do you have any idea how many cases would be involved, and will this require you to revise your fiscal note on the bill?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I do not believe that it will require us to revise the fiscal note on this section of the bill.
How about the whole? Oh, go ahead. Through the chair, is that because you don't foresee many cases or what?
I would say because, through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we have an excellent investigative staff who reviews these and puts them forward, but there is a limited amount that we can do. And without additional investigators, which, you know, we could certainly do that if that's, you know, what you request of us is to increase that. But that's not addressed in the fiscal note. Our fiscal note addresses the sex offender registration portion.
Oh,
that's where our fiscal note is aimed at, not the investigation.
If I may follow up with a question. That being the case, if you're not seeking more money for this portion of the bill, will that require you to, insofar as this will involve additional cases, not take other cases? And if the answer to that is possibly yes, can you give us an idea what you wouldn't be taking?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I would state that I would have to leave that deferred up to our investigators, but my knowledge of it is that, again, we would investigate and go after the most egregious cases, and we are overwhelmed with those at this point. I don't know what it would take to, you know, go into this other element of virtual. And if the commissioner's online, he may be able to answer it. But our first priority are the kids who are actually affected.
Of course.
So, yes.
I mean, Mr. Chair, if I may ask one more question.
Yes, Representative Grunberg.
Is the commissioner online?
No, Representative Grunberg.
Not. Okay. Well, fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I sense a lot of curiosity around the table about what this amendment means, but little opposition to it. So if there isn't any opposition to this amendment, I would ask whether you want to maintain your objection.
Oh, no. No, that was simply for purpose of discussion.
So the objection to amendment number one has been withdrawn. Seeing no further objection, then amendment number one passes. We next we now move to A.8, Representative Gruenberg. This is Luckup A.8, begins with page 2, line 30, by Representative Gruenberg. Do members have an amendment before them?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the amendment.
I'll object for purposes of the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd ask Mr. Luckup if he could come up to the table, please.
Amendment number two.
This is amendment number two.
Hi, Jerry. We're so happy to have you before the committee this year. We've missed you. I hope you're well.
I'm so excited to be back here today. Always. I'm serious.
Yeah, I am too. We like you very much. We respect you. We like you, and we're happy to have your influence.
For the record, my name is Jerry Luckup, Legislative Counsel for Mr. Division of Legal Services.
I will introduce the amendment, and then Mr. Luckup can be here to answer any questions. I move the amendment, and the chair's objective for purpose of discussion. If the members would kindly look at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3. We're dealing with section 3 of the bill. And line 16 on page 2, and this, by the way, deals with the mental intent required to prove failure to register. Line 16 requires a knowing mental intent. In other words, the offender, the accused, must know that he or she is required to register. That is the only mental intent that's required. And the way subsection B at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3 is written could be read to conflict with the requirement of knowledge. And it was my intent in doing this simply to make it crystal clear that that's the only mental intent that will be required to prove the crime. And so what we do, Mr. Chairman and members, I hope I'm explaining this in a manner that's really simple.
Exceptionally well.
Okay. That we are eliminating sub B and we're putting it in a new statement of legislative intent that will be in the blue book immediately at the bottom of the statute. And Mr. Luckup has informed me that with one exception, this is the way they normally do it. And the reason, Mr. Chairman, that they do it this way is you don't put in a criminal statute what is not required to be proven. You only put in what is required to be proven. And if the amendment is adopted, and I hope it will be, it'll say specifically that knowledge is required, and then the legislative intent concerning the mental state will say that nothing else is required to be proven. And it's a very clear amendment. Nothing changed, just so there's no confusion.
Jerry, we had a robust discussion last week that something could be deposited onto your computer without knowing about it, and if I understand it correctly, as a layperson, that's what this amendment addresses.
No, no, it's nothing to do with computers at all. This is not anything to do with computers. This is the failure to register as a sex offender.
Thank you.
Right.
This has nothing to do with computers.
Culpable mental. Oh, I see. Adds on Uncott is stating that the only culpable mental state is knowing.
Yeah, and this makes it very clear. The B, the way it's written now, at least I read it, it could be confusing, and I don't want to give a defense lawyer in this particular case an opportunity to say that they don't even have, you know.
Jerry? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, my request from Representative Gruenberg was to write the amendment the same way the Department of Law did, but in a way that's emphasized that there is no requirement of a culpable mental state for the portion of the law they wanted no culpable mental state for. That was less confusing. And also in the way that we've normally done this, over the last 20 years or whatever, when we've done, when I've had to write a provision that eliminates the culpable mental state, we usually put it in a provision at the end of the statute to be placed in a note underneath for everybody to see there. There's been one occasion where the legislature has done put in that there is no culpable mental state, and was related to a change we made to manslaughter a few years back, and was in a governor's bill. And it just went through, and there was no change, but that's the only occasion in Title 11 where we've done that. But the amendment does not change, in my mind, anything that the Department of Law requested in their draft.
Thank you. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just to clarify this, the intent of the amendment is to do the exact same thing that the bill language would do, but to do it in a way that's more consistent with how the legislature traditionally does things?
Yes.
Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, that's the way it's traditionally been done in terms of this doing away with the requisite culpable mental state.
So, Mr. Chairman, it should have the same effect, would be the intent. Okay.
Thank you. I withdraw my objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was precisely my intention.
Seeing no objection, Amendment number 2 is passed from committee. Amendment number 3 is A. Thank you very much, Jerry. Amendment number 3 is A.9. I'm withdrawing Amendment number 3. Okay. Amendment number 4 is A.15. Jane, will you take us through A.15, please?
Chairman Ramirez, this would amend Section 4 of the bill. And basically, what it does is remove sexual abuse of a minor, not to be included under this section, lack of consent of the bill, because there is no consent in sexual abuse of a minor. It is a crime. So we just wanted to make sure that this was not in any way used in a sexual abuse of a minor case.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Did anybody object to Amendment number 4?
Mr.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg objects to Amendment number 4.
It was simply for discussion.
Understood. We have 4 before us for discussion. Any questions, Representative Grunberg?
Thank you. So this would basically substitute a new Section 4 for the current language, Jane, in Section 4.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair. It would pretty much maintain the same language used in subsection A, but what it would do was say that any crimes against a minor were not included in this.
Okay. And once again, Mr. Chair, you're going fast and sometimes I'm a little slow here. The reason for doing this is what?
So that it cannot be pled down into a harassment and a Class A misdemeanor, it would stay a felony.
I see. Okay, I will withdraw my objection.
And if members will recall, we're not only dealing with sexual offenses, but also sexual offenses of a minor. So this draws a distinction between the two. Representative Grunberg has withdrawn his objection. Do I have another member? I'll object for the purposes of discussion until we've concluded. Representative Gatto?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I wanted to add Amendment number 1 to Amendment number 4, and that is on line 9 following the word anus to add the word buttocks.
I'm going to object to the amendment to the amendment. It seems like we had this conversation a week ago Monday, and so
we approved it.
I don't remember. My impression. So Susan, I've objected to the amendment to the amendment to include the language and buttocks. Is that right?
Well, it's just buttocks and then or female breast, either directly or through clothing. Because we have the word or following.
All right. And Jane, were you here? You were in and out of the room. Does any member, Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe I was having that conversation with Annie Carpinetti. And I believe, and Mr. Svobodny could maybe back this up, but my recollection is she said that was already covered in second degree harassment.
That's what I thought. So
I'll withdraw.
So the amendment to the amendment has been withdrawn. We had an objection, is that right? I objected for the purposes of discussion, so we still have amendment number four before us for discussion. The intent of the amendment is to make it never appropriate to touch a minor and allow for it to be pled down to harassment, to paraphrase. Is that right, Jane?
Through the chair, that's correct.
All right, I will remove my objection. Seeing none, amendment number four passes. We now have before us is amendment number 5A.13. Page 3, line 19. So this would, after the word clothing, would insert, and the other person is 16 years of age or older.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to object.
Representative Gruenberg objects.
It hasn't been moved yet, actually.
I'm sorry. I move amendment number 5. Representative Gruenberg objects. Thank you.
This is weird.
Representative Ramos and the committee members, this is an amendment offered by Department of Law in the same section, section number 4, to cure the same problem. So it is really up to the committee and the committee's wishes as to what language they think is more appropriate here.
Okay, so this is a policy call by the committee. Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Chair, it would be a little helpful, at least to me, if we have several amendments that are alternative, even if one is offered, we could know at the time we talk about that one that there are a couple of others in the in the packet that are alternative, so we know we don't deal with one and adopt it and then we start talking about another that would be an alternative, if we could know what the other ones were at the same time.
You got them, right?
Yeah, but we've got a whole pile and I don't know which one's relating to which.
Let's just take an at ease for a few minutes so you can go through the material. We're back on the record, Representative Hearn.
But for clarification, one amendment was the chairman's and one was the department's, right?
That's correct, and as a courtesy, I'm offering them for the department.
For the Mr. Chairman, at least for this member, I would rather it stand like that rather than trying to mishmash amendments that coming from a legislator versus coming from the department.
Agreed. And so while we were at it and while we were at an at ease, we had a discussion over whether some of the amendments were similar. The example I used was tomato versus tomato. In this case, amendment number 4, and originated by our office, and amendment number 5, originated by the Department of Law that we are offering on their behalf, are similar in their intent, but different in their construct. As a courtesy, I moved amendment number 5. Representative Gruenberg objected for the purposes of discussion. We have amendment number 5 before us. Is it the will of the committee that amendment number 5 is inferior to amendment number 4 and that the amendment should be withdrawn?
That would be my suggestion.
All right. So if you will remove your objection.
Done.
Then I will withdraw amendment number 5. Is that satisfactory to the members?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. We now have before us.
Can I inquire something?
Representative Gruenberg.
Representative Hearn, are you suggesting that, that if there are two amendments on the same subject, they be told to us at the same time so we could see which one we want to see?
I'll yield to the chair's prerogative, but the source, I think, should be debated separately, if there are different sources. But as far as that procedure, I would defer to the leadership.
Thank you. And Representative Gruenberg, I'll have Jane do that. I'll flag her the next time
Thank
that
you.
We have similar amendments that are
because I know we do in some cases here.
Indeed. Okay, so we have, I move amendment number 6, which is Luckup A.11.
Object for discussion.
Representative Holmes objects for the purpose of the discussion. We are on page 6, line 30 and 31. And all right, and Jane, can you take us through the meaning? It says, and the defendant was 10 or more years older than the...
Mr. Chair, just point of order, if I may, for a moment.
Gruenberg.
This looks to me like it's an alternative to the amendment that's under this in the pile, that's A.14. So amendment A.11 and A.14 are alternative approaches to the same issue, as I understand it.
Chair Ramirez, maybe I could offer a little clarification on this.
All right.
Amendments A11 and A14 both deal with Section 14 of the bill, which would be an aggravator in sentencing for sexual abuse of a minor, which would add a 10-year or more age difference to being an aggravator. The difference in the two are the offenses that it covers. A.14 also covers sexual abuse of a minor in fourth degree, incest, and electronic distribution of indecent materials to minors, as well as sexual abuse of a minor 1 through 3, which is covered in A.11. So A.14 is just more inclusive of offenses. It includes more offenses than A.11.
May I inquire?
Representative Grunberg.
Okay, the three additional offenses in A.14. One was incest, and what were the other two?
Sexual abuse of a minor in a fourth degree, and electronic distribution of indecent materials to minors.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Electronic distribution of material to minor, huh?
Representing Grunberg.
I would ask one of two alternatives. I prefer A.14 that's a little broader, because I think the policy applies to those crimes. And I would ask the chair if he would be willing to withdraw number 6 and let's move to the other one.
Okay. I understand, and I apologize for the cumbersome nature of the way we are offering the amendments today. So I'm also comfortable with that. Is there an objection at the table?
No,
will you withdraw
Chairman,
your objection?
I withdraw my objection.
So we have before us amendment number 6. I will withdraw amendment number 6. And we will move to amendment number 7, which is lockup A.14. I move amendment number 7.
I'll object just for discussion, and then I will withdraw.
Representative Grunberg objects. Representative Grunberg.
No, that was just for discussion.
Right.
I support the amendment.
Oh, thank you. I also support the amendment. Is there a discussion on amendment number 7? Representative Gatto?
Just a clarification. You have a victim who's 10 and a perpetrator who is
20.
What if he's only 17 or 18 or 19?
Then I believe he would not be an aggravator.
Representative Gatto, through the chair, this would be an aggravator at time of sentencing. It would not be a separate offense. So yes, it would be a different.
I just wondered why we would delete the 18 or older and substitute, which was an aggravator too.
Representative.
And substitute 10-year difference.
Representative Gatto, through the chair, that would not be deleted. It would be added.
Page six, lines 30, 31, delete all materials.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse
it
me.
It would be deleted.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, good catch.
Ooh.
May I inquire?
Representative
Mr. Gatto. Representative Gatto, are you suggesting that rather than on line 2 of the amendment, deleting all material and insert, you would rather just say add at
Jerry?
The end of the line?
Jerry? Mr. Lockup.
He was studying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not allowed.
Yeah. That'd be an amendment to the amendment.
This is what we're talking about.
Is that page 6? Is this one? It's that one, right? That's mm-hmm. all we're doing.
Mr. Lockup.
I'm not entirely sure what the question was because I was looking at something else. But through the chair, Representative Gatto, this
what the Department of Law, from what I understand, is trying to do with the amendment they proposed, which this is implementing, was to get at those offenders where there's substantial age difference between them and the victim. We don't do that in current law right now, other than we to determine whether or not there's an offense, we look at whether or not there's a, in some cases, sexual abuse of a minor, if there's a four-year age difference between the offender and the victim, and then it becomes an offense. This is meant to provide an aggravating factor which allows the judge to increase the sentence up to the maximum for the offense if there's a 10-year age difference. In my mind, it's not really relevant if the offender is 4 or the offender's 14 and the victim's 3. That 14-year-old is probably not going to be subject to criminal liability in Alaska because they would have to be waived into adult court for that. It will subject, so this won't have any impact on them. It's only going to apply to people that are subject to sentencing in an adult court. And that's going to be, for the most part, those that are over 16. And so both myself and the Department of Law, when they drafted this amendment, the Department of Law's amendment was the first one. They removed that requirement of 18 years of age, as it wasn't significant in this case for these offenses. So that's my answer.
Mr. Chair. Representative Grunberg.
If you can mentally do a matrix, there are two different criteria that we're discussing. One is the age of the defendant. Mm-hmm. The other is the difference in age. Mm-hmm. So that's one part of the matrix. The other is whether you wish to make it and or. So you could have both an age and a difference, or you could have an age or a difference.
Well,
and you know, as you, I'm not suggesting anything. I'm just suggesting the choices you have: age, difference, and or.
And Mr. Chair, that would require both conditions to be present at the same time.
Only if it's and. If
that's
it's
right.
Disjunctive,
so,
you could have either one.
And so, Mr. Chair, if I had and, I would really be upset by having an additional requirement before you could meet
so this. So you don't want to do that.
I want to one do, at a time, please.
I want to do or.
That would be an amendment to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Aaron. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jerry, so your comment when you trying to explain the question that Representative Gatto had is basically the Department of Law has made a decision that they'll more criminals will be in the net by making this amendment rather than leaving it the way it is, essentially is what it is, what I understand it to be.
Through the chair, Representative Herron, the way I understood the original provision only related to one small provision of the sexual abuse of a minor statute to provide this aggravating factor. Their amendment that was provided me, which I redid in A11, which is the one the committee's not going to consider right now, expanded out to a broader class of sexual offenders, those that are committing sexual abuse of a minor who are more than 10 years older than their victims. They basically decided those people are more should suffer more condemnation from the state for that action. And having the offender be 18 years of age or older doesn't really tie in with that 10-year difference anymore. You know, the offender may be 18 and the victim 7. The offender may be 17 and the victim 6. Those people are going to be subject to criminal liability. A 15-year-old and a 5-year-old victim or 4-year-old victim may be subject to criminal liability too. There's a possibility to have them waived into adult court. If they do get into adult court, then this aggravating factor would apply. Otherwise, it wouldn't. And so I can't really say why they offered the amendment, but to me, it's obvious that they felt all of these SAM offenses, sexual abuse of minor offenses,
should have the opportunity for an aggravated sentence when you have a substantial age difference between the offender and the victim.
Representative Grimberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We focused on the text of the amendment after on line 4. I'd like to focus on the text of the amendment for just a moment on line 3 and contrast it to the statute that's referenced on page 6, line 30. Once, and I don't have my book in front of me here, so Jerry, through the chair, Mr. Lockup, is there a substantial difference between just referencing AS 11.41.436A2 on the one hand, as in the text of the bill, and on the other, referencing those statutes that are listed on line 3 of the amendment? What is the difference? Which one of those is broader, and why?
Well, through the chair, Representative Grubenberg, obviously the A14 is broader than the original amendment, which was only adding 436A 2 in. And A2 dealt with the offender being 16 years of age or older. That's current law. The offender engages in sexual contact with a person who is under 13 years of age. So you've got a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old, minimum 16. The amendment applies that same age difference to the sexual penetration offenses dealing with sexual abuse of a minor and the other contact offenses relating to sexual abuse of a minor. I'm not sure what the rationale was originally for just picking out this one offense, but the rationale for having this 10-year difference is something the legislature has struggled with over the last few sessions. In the last few legislatures, they've attempted to deal with the substantial age difference between the offender and the victim.
For the committee members at this table that are lay people like myself, it's easier for me to frame this that the A.11 offered by the Department of Law as Amendment Number 6, which is withdrawn, similar to A.14, which is Amendment Number 7 that is before us, and one of them broadcasts more narrowly than the other. We have before us the amendment that is a broadcast wider, and so I'm in favor of the one that captures that recognizes and identifies more aggravators than the one that captures fewer aggravators. But the construction of the amendment is such that for a layperson, just speaking for myself, it's difficult to understand because it simply references statutes rather than specifies the nature of the what the aggravators apply to. So I'm very comfortable to move forward with Amendment Number 7. I know Representative Gatto has a question, but I just want to make sure that we're just staying focused on the this is a distinction and a contrast between withdrawn Amendment Number 6 and Amendment Number 7, which is before us, which both do similar things. One does more than the other. Representative Gatto.
Yeah, Jerry, what are the consequences of simply leaving the 18-years-old language there and adding the 10-year language? Do we run into a conflict between the two? Or is it just give the courts the opportunity to say, you know, you were only 9 years difference, but by Jove, you're 21 years old. You should know better.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, in some cases, this aggravating factor wouldn't be able to be applied. For example, where we specify the offender is 18 and the victim is 15. Mm-hmm. That's an element of the offense, or that the offender is older than 18 and the victim is 16 or 17, then they're in a position of authority. That ends up having as an aggravating factor the same conduct that is specified as an element of the offense, and then you can't use it as an aggravating factor at that point. And so what we've done, I think, what the Department of Law was trying to do here was specify an aggravating factor that can be applied. And if you just add in the offenders over 18, you're bringing in this whole class of offenders who it's just, in my mind, almost this an element of the crime, and that you may not be able to apply this aggravating factor to that conduct. So I think it does have some meaning to restrict that and just try to pick out these offenders that are substantially older than the victims.
Mr. Chair, I'll yield and withdraw my amendment to the amendment.
Mr. Chair. Representative Greenberg, I didn't know what the amendment
was. Not that I'm necessarily advocating this, but I think one of at least my functions on the committee is sometimes to present other legal alternatives that we could consider here so that at least everybody knows that there are other things we could do if we wish. With the Gatto amendment withdrawn,
just for a moment of clarification, I didn't recollect that we had an amendment to the amendment before us.
I'm sorry, I stand corrected.
I think we were discussing some changes, but I think it was a matter of discussion, and there was no amendment to the amendment
right
before us. But we do appreciate the fact that you frequently offer alternatives, and I am grateful that many of times the community is wealthier
I don't mean to be a pest or anything. One thing that you could do, if, and I'm kind of looking at Representative Gatto here, if you're concerned, 10 years is sort of an arbitrary thing. You can make that whatever you wish the committee could change that if they wanted.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. That's an excellent point. So the 10 years is presumably an arbitrary number.
I'm not making an amendment. I'm just raising it.
So what I'd like to do is I'd like to, if the objection is not going to be maintained, is I'd like to pass Amendment Number 7, move through this, and for us to flag this, and if any members, before we adjourn today in 45 minutes, think that that number should be modified from 10 years to a different age distinction before the aggravators are triggered, then we certainly can come back and make that another amendment or a conceptual amendment at the end of the discussion. So who had objected to Amendment Number 7? Who held the objection? Was it you, Representative Holmes?
I have lost track.
Might have been me.
Was there?
I think it was Representative Holmes.
Going through it.
Yeah.
I think it was Holmes.
Happy to remove it. That was the one who objected. Gruenberg initially objected for purposes
withdrawn
of discussion.
All right. So Representative Gruenberg has withdrawn his objection. Amendment Number 7 passes from committee. We now have before us Amendment Number 8, which is Luckup A.20. Stand by for a second. Jane, I go to
that's
amendment
on the next page. That one's out of order.
Okay. Amendment Number 8 will be Luckup A.6.
I'll object.
I move Amendment Number 8.
I'll object for discussion.
Representative Holmes objects for the purpose of discussion. Jane, I'm going to ask you to discuss this in the context of A.6, and then also, Representative Holmes, you have an amendment, A.4, that is similar.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm planning, if your amendment passes, I'm planning not to offer mine. It's redundant, but I think yours may be actually the way to go.
Okay. So A.6 and A.4 are going to be similar in construction. Let's take up A.6. And to see whether it satisfies the committee, and then we will proceed to A.4 after that, and see whether it's still germane to committee discussion. As I understand this, Jane, what we are dealing with in A.6 is an incongruity between a sex offender who comes to Alaska, which was identified by the Attorney General and by Commissioner Masters as a significant issue with people that are soliciting the state of Alaska to see whether, if they are a registered sex offender, they can move to Alaska. And when sex offenders from other states do come to Alaska, there is not an exact alignment with our offenses and their offenses. So with that as a pretext, can you take us through specifics in A.6, please, Jane or Jared.
Mr. Chairman, 8.6 is slightly different than what the Department of Law proposed in this regard. It's attempting to, instead of saying that this sex offense that was committed in the other state that is not a sex offense in this state, instead of trying to say that it is a sex offense in this state, but have people convicted of the offense in this state not have to register, I was charged with a way to address this, and I came up with this method of saying that the person's required to register in the other state, then that is a separate alternative for us to require registration in this state. And so we look to, they're required to register in the other state, then they have to register here. And basically what we're doing is basically giving full faith and credit, or comity, as it's called, to this other state's law, and we're trying to effectuate that. And then instead of us requiring them to register for a period of time that we set in our state that isn't relevant to anything, we just look to the other state's registration law. And so, and to do that, we need to do that because federal law says we have to register sex offenders from other states. The problem comes in is when different states try to define sex offender in different ways. And so what do you do there? And so this way seems to be how we handle probationers and parolees. We don't say that they are offenders under the law of our state. You know, there's a compact, which would have been the better way for Congress to have done this. There's a compact there, but we register them using the other state's law, basically, and then apply just us. And so it seems to work.
So in this case, again, and I'm a layperson, so whereas a university, if you're trying to transfer University of Oregon credits to University of Alaska, it's difficult to transfer credits sometimes. In this case, all University of Oregon credits would be accepted at University of Alaska. And if their History 101 course comes with a 10-year parole, and ours only carries 7 years for a similar crime, then we would expand ours to 10 years so that there would be an alignment compared to the previous state. Conversely, if theirs only had a 5-year provision and ours had a 10-year provision, then that offender would also enjoy the 5-year provision from the other state. Whatever it was in the other state would come over to, would transfer to this state in full force. Is that, do I understand it as a layperson?
Mr. Chairman, that's a succinct explanation of what I said in a bunch more words.
Thank you. We have a question for Representative Herron, and then Mr. Sabatini, do you want to make a comment on this?
I would like to.
Okay. All right. Representative
Herron. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess a clarification, and Jerry, maybe you can help me with this, is the way I read this, if you have in State X, you have 9 years, 6 months on your registration, you committed a crime, but when you come to Alaska with 6 months left on State X's, is you're not registering for 5 years and 6 months, you're registering for 6 months in the state of Alaska. Is that correct? Yes. That's what this amendment does?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, this just requires them to register for the period of time they still have left in the other state. Our minimum period is 15 years. The federal law sets up criteria, and a number of states have adopted the same criteria, and the registration period can be as low as 10 years. We don't recognize that. We require a minimum of 15. And so, and it also, these other states, there are sex offenses that aren't sex offenses in Alaska. We've said that these things are not sex offenses. You do not have to register. In the other state, they do. And so the problem is, what do you do with those people? And you either say that their sex offense in the other state is a sex offense here, and we try to register those people, but then you have people convicted of Alaska for that offense. It's not a crime, or it's not something you have to register for, and then people from out of state move here and they have to register. That doesn't seem to work either. So the idea was just to require If you're required to register in another state, you move to Alaska, you have to register in Alaska, and your period is whatever the other state requires, just like we do with probationers and parolees.
Okay. Can we hear Mr. Sabodny first and see what his question is about this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Rick Sabodny, and I'm the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division. I think you describe what the amendment that's before you does. The concern that I have with doing it that way is that public safety then has to maintain, if we're only talking about the other states, 49 separate different time frames that they have to figure out. Mr. Luckup is correct that that other states have different times to register. I would disagree with him in that it's 10. I think he's thinking about the federal law that only one state has complied with at this point, 10 years, 25 in life. So it becomes very difficult for the Department of Public Safety the idea behind this change was so that public safety didn't have to go do this research in all the other states and find out whether there were similar elements if the person was required to register in, say, Minnesota. And I picked Minnesota particularly because they don't even have a tiering system. They have an assessment system. So that could be, for registration in Minnesota, 1 year to life. So, I mean, the Department of Public Safety here would have to do a tremendous amount of research if you took the approach of this amendment for the people who have to register. The state's proposal was, if you have one offense in the other state keep our tiering system. If you have if you're in Minnesota and you have 5 years, you're still going to have to register for 15 in Alaska. Or if you have Montana and you have a life, then you're going to be doing life there. So you only have two choices. So public safety just needs to figure out where you fit between 15 and life under the state's proposal. But this one would make them have to do all kinds of extra work in each of these cases.
Representative Perrin, then Grinberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the courtesy, because it follows directly what Ledge Legal said is I guess that's the answer I'm looking for. So if someone from whatever state shows up and it's 9.6 on his registration and ours is 15, so the guy is signing up for 5 years and 6 months, right, under our registration.
That's through the chair. That would be correct.
With this amendment?
With this amendment, he would, as I understand it, he would be signing up for 10 or another 6 months.
Let's go to Mr. Mittman with the ACLU. Jane handed me a note that he can address the constitutional problem with this. Is that right? Jeffrey, are you with us?
I am. Thank you, the chair. Our concern has to do with the recent Supreme Court decision of Doe v. State, and that had to do with individuals who had been convicted of sex offenses prior to initiation of registration requirements. And the Alaska Supreme Court found that under the ex post facto rule, it was not constitutional to retroactively require these individuals to register. Our concern with a sort of blanket rule of requiring individuals who move to the state of Alaska to register is that we could potentially run into the same sort of problem with when their registration requirements were enacted, if they have a similar ex post facto ruling in effect in their states. So you're potentially running into a lot of individual challenges to the legislation that's proposed here.
So, Mr. Mittman, this is Chair Rammer. So what you're saying is that if a person comes to this state and they only have 4 years left to be supervised, and we instantly stick them with a 15-year supervision because we have a one-size or two-size-fits-all state here, then we risk we run the risk of violating their constitutional rights. Is that it?
More specifically, Chair, that a For example, let's say the state of Indiana has passed a registration requirement, and they passed it in the year 2008, and they have retroactively applied that to all individuals who convicted of sex offenses prior to 2008. If that individual moves here, and under Alaska, under Indiana law, the Indiana Supreme Court had not found that retroactive registration requirement to be unconstitutional. In point of fact, here in Alaska, that individual could challenge his registration requirement here in Alaska. I don't know if that was a clear answer.
I think I grasp what you're saying. Mr. Luckup is going to come up and give us a hand.
That was my concern.
Mr. Chairman, it's definitely an issue. I think we can address Mr. Savani's concerns with a provision that says that the 15 or lifetime registration period will apply in Alaska unless the person supplies evidence of the actual registration period in the other state. Then the department doesn't have to do that research. We already require people moving to Alaska to give us proof of when their unconditional discharge was. And so they have to supply that proof to us in order for us to be able to calculate their period under current law. We already require that. We can require them to submit that information to us. And if they don't, then the registrations for 15 or years or life. There's still going to be an issue, the gentleman's on the teleconference is stating, there still may be an issue to apply this to these people who are convicted prior to the effective date of this act. And that's going to get sorted out in the courts again, I would assume.
Max. Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you. Folks, this was my concern as well. And if you look at Representative Holmes' amendment as opposed to this, it seems to me, and Representative Holmes and Mr. Luckup, correct me if I'm wrong, the main difference between the two amendments is the applicability section on page 2, lines 10 to 19 of Amendment A6. That seems to me to be the main difference between the two amendments. Jane is nodding and Joe's mm-hmm. Jerry. Okay. I'd like to focus on that language because that seems to me, under the John Doe decision that Mr. Mittman has talked about and Mr. Luckup has alluded to, and I think Mr. Svobodny too, there are what's called ex post facto problems with this, which means you can't enact a law punishing a crime after the crime was committed. That's unconstitutional. Nor can you increase the punishment for a crime after the crime was committed, and here particularly after the person was sentenced. And the problematic language on page 2 of Amendment A6 to me is on line 17 and 18 of page 2, Mr. Chair. And it seems to me it could be cured. We could spend quite a while arguing the nuances of this. But a simple amendment to that might cure it. And I'm asking Mr. Luckup, Mr. Svobodny, Mr. Mittman, anybody who wants to comment. If on page 2.
Page 2 of the amendment?
Of A6. Strike the phrase regardless of whether. And if we add the word if, there and on line 18, strike, quote, before, on, or after. But I'm not sure that that would do it. That might get it better. But I think what we'd have to do is to say not if the duty to register has not expired, but if the conviction and the sentence, or if the crime occurs after the effective date of the act. My language wouldn't go far enough, and I'd ask to make certain this is constitutional, Mr. Luckup, what would we have to say on line 17 and 18? Would it have to be if the crime occurs after, if it's the conviction, if it's the sentencing? Through the chair, what would the language be?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg. I wrote this applicability section because I felt that it was defensible for the state to apply this requirement of registration to these people whose period of registration has not expired. We can, for example, when we're dealing with general criminal liability, we can extend the statute of limitations for any offense that has not yet expired. In my mind, these people are already registering. We aren't bringing in people who, which the previous the decisions that we dealt with in other cases, we aren't bringing in people who were convicted who weren't registering yet, that were convicted when we expanded out our sex offender registration law. We expanded it in more crimes, bringing in more people who weren't subject to registration, and then saying you have to register even though you were convicted 5 years ago before we expanded the offense. That is a problem, and that's what the state lost on that issue of trying to bring these people in who weren't required to register before. They've already been convicted, and now we're adding this new requirement on. In this case, what I'm doing is I'm only looking at the people that are already required to register. And we aren't adding new offenses other than we're just saying that if you're required to register in this other state, you have to register here. And my rationale for that, as I said, is just like when we extended statute of limitations. That's been found to be perfectly constitutional in every state. And so that was the rationale. If we want to do it the way that Representative Gruenberg suggested, we would just have to say the underlying crime.
We got it. Representative Gatto and then Holmes.
Just for background, Missouri, public urination is a sex offense. Person in Missouri comes up here, not a sex offense here. You have to register.
Federal law seems to say that states need to enact laws allowing registration for those people. Under this, we either under the Department of Laws provision or under this amendment, registration would be required for that person. Now, while public urination isn't a crime up here, indecent exposure before a child under the age of 16 is a sex crime requiring registration. So it would depend upon the circumstances. But if you argued that public urination was indecent exposure, then it could at times be a sex offense in Alaska, but most of the time it probably wouldn't be. But those people are required to register in the other state. They would be required to register here, but for the period required in the other state.
I want to set this amendment aside.
May I ask one question?
Yes, I want to isolate our issues. This is a squirrely thing. It's a small part of what we're doing, and I want to move through this and isolate the issues that the committee has before us. So,
one question.
Yes, Representative Grover.
And this is something that you guys can look at. In state X, they're required to register in state X, but not required to register outside state X. They're free to travel outside with no registration requirement. Would that not be an ex post facto prohibited act if we now require them to register if they go to another state where they were not required under the law of the first state to register before? That's what I was getting at. And you can answer that later, but that was
a rhetorical question. I'd like to set Amendment 8 aside. Representative Holmes, if it's okay with you, we will set A.4 aside.
That's fine.
Kathy Monfreda would like to come back and speak to A.6 as we take it up at the end of this hour. Jerry, thank you very much for your assistance. A.4 was not offered, so amendment number 9 will be A.16. Members have A.16 before them.
Number 9?
A.4. It says A.16 is next.
Oh, it's the same.
It's the same
thing.
It's the same, I see. So A.16 is the same as A.6 and A.4, is that right?
So this is not offered yet, huh?
So we will set amendment number 9 aside. Did I move number 9 yet?
No.
Okay. So we will not take up A.16. Amendment number 9 will be A.12. I move amendment number 9, which is A.12.
I'll object for discussion.
I'll object substantively.
Right. Representative Holmes has objected for the purposes of discussion. A.12 is on page 8. Line 24.
And any?
Mr. Chair.
This is an amendment that I'm offering as a courtesy to the Department of Law. The Chair does not agree with the Department of Law on this.
Just for the record, we have a bunch of amendments, the rest of the packet, all deal with page 8 of the bill.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so Mr. Sabodny, do you want to come up and explain why this doesn't violate the defendant's rights, which is my concern, is that a conviction would be reversed because we deprive them of their constitutional rights?
It's easy, Mr. Chairman. We're talking about the substituting any for an.
Correct.
And any can be, and this is in the context of examining child pornography. Any expert could be your local mechanic who has nothing to do with child pornography. An expert is more likely to be the person who's supposed to be viewing the child pornography.
Wouldn't you have to reach expert status in the courtroom?
No, Mr. Chairman. No, the defense just tells us who. I mean, that this is early on in the case where they're investigating it before we go to trial.
So does an expert mean one, which is how I read it, to be in the singular, or does it still mean that if the defense wants to call four different experts, that's what I got. What's the meaning of the word that I got hung up on? Again, I'm a lay person, but I have an attorney to the right of me nodding that my lay understanding of that is accurate.
Mr. Chairman, that certainly wasn't the intent here. The intent was that we don't have a defendant claiming he's an expert in the area. Maybe he is the best expert and gets access to the child pornography or anybody else. Frankly, this was just if the committee was going to accept this part of the bill, it was just kind of a cleanup, and it's not all that important to us. It was just trying to clear up an ambiguity.
Okay. Representative Grunberg.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I agree with the expert to your right and you this would probably be read as, particularly if they looked at the legislative history, changing any to an. I think most courts would, if they knew the legislative history, would interpret it the way you did and limit it to one. With respect to the argument that this could include a motor mechanic, I don't think that would be an expert that the defendant may use, being used, meaning offer, it should be actually offer, on the issue. A motor mechanic wouldn't be on the issue. So I think that couldn't be, and I hope we do not offer this amendment.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. If we struck the word any and just made expert into experts, wouldn't that resolve the question?
The question is directed to me through the chair. I think so, Representative Gatto. The purpose was we're just trying to clear up an ambiguity, and I think you've maybe hit on a way to do that.
If it satisfies Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lockhopt is here, and as I understand it, the drafting manual normally does not use plural. It uses singular. And I think any expert is clearer than experts. I would hope that we could leave it the way it is.
I think that we could offer a conceptual amendment that would comprise what Representative Gatto was talking about, satisfy those of us that are concerned that it's not in the
singular.
That's not into the in the singular. So, Representative Gatto, if you would offer an amendment to amendment
number nine,
that I think think what might be easiest is if we is if I withdrew amendment number 9 and then you offered conceptual amendment number 10 that put the experts in the plural and then let Mr. Luckup draft it in a way that is conforming with the legal manual. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Representative Gruenberg, does that make sense?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I would hope that what I think the intent is it would be any experts, plural.
I think we're all clear on what we're trying to, the needle we're trying to thread here. So with that, I'm going to withdraw amendment number 9. And then, Representative Gatto, would you like to offer conceptual amendment number 10?
Mr. Chair, I move conceptual amendment number 10 to strike the word any and add an S to expert.
On page 8, line
24. I'm sorry, page 8, line 24.
Thank you. Is there an objection?
I'm going to object. I would like it to say any experts, plural. I'm wondering if that would be considered a friendly amendment to the amendment.
Yeah.
Then I would, with that being the amendment,
I'll withdraw my objection. Consider that friendly. I'm fine with that.
Thanks.
Can you repeat that, please?
Right, so just for the word S, what we're going to do is just
add some experts. Plural.
Golly, Max.
I'm sorry.
So I have a conceptual amendment number 10. I'm going to leave that in the conceptual amendment form. You're going to change it so that it's any experts.
Correct.
Plural. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So we have before us conceptual amendment number 10 on page 8, line 24, that says any experts in the plural. Is there an objection to conceptual amendment? Is the objection removed to conceptual amendment number 10?
It is.
It's withdrawn. Conceptual amendment number 10 passes.
To go.
I now have amendment number 11 before us, which is A.17. Members have A.17 before them. I move amendment number 11.
I will object for discussion.
Representative Gruenberg objects for discussion. And then, Jane, I have this down to, I made a note in our conversation to withdraw.
Chair Ramos, I think Mr. Luckup could speak to this very eloquently about what the difference is between the two amendments, and maybe that would give us a good idea before we actually pick which amendment we want.
Thank you. So I've already introduced amendment number 11. The conversation that we had before Representative Holmes was going to be to withdraw amendment A.17 in favor of A.3. So I think what I'm going to do is withdraw amendment number 11. And we will move to A.3.
Okay.
No?
Is that correct?
That'll be number 12.
Yes.
Yeah. Number 12. Mr. Chairman, if you're ready, I'll move amendment number 12.
So, yes.
Just A.3.
So we have before us now amendment number 12, which is A.3. And I will object for the purposes of discussion. Representative Holmes.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, it looks like we have people at the table who can walk through this.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holmes' Amendment A.3 is basically using the federal law that was referenced by the Department of Law as to why they needed to restrict access to these materials. The federal law specifically provides provisions on when experts can access the materials and how they can access the materials. And this is basically takes the federal law verbatim, which is was cited for restrictions the Department of Law needed to Rule 16 and puts them into Rule 16 as the federal, as Congress stated the rule. And so basically it says that the court shall deny any request by the defense to access these child pornography materials, provided they make the property reasonably available to the defendant. And that was defined in federal law basically as to be reasonably available as available to the expert under conditions that are specified in the lines 11 through 14. And actually, in implementing this, federal district courts have actually allowed the materials to go directly to the defense in cases where they were not allowed, where the prosecution did not allow the defense access to materials. For example, there was an Alaska U.S. District Court case where the materials were actually being held down in Washington State, either Washington State or Oregon, and the expert came to examine them, and the only way the FBI would allow the expert to examine them is they tape recorded the expert and the screen as he was looking at the screen and his analysis. And so the court there said that was not a reasonable, they did not reasonably allow the expert to access the materials, and the court then released the materials directly to a copy of the materials directly to the defense expert at that point. So it's from what I understood, it was the rationale for this section of the bill, and I was directed basically to look to the rationale, in this case the federal law language, and put that into the rule.
Representative Grunberg.
I'd like to focus on the language on line 13 and 14. There are only three classes of people who would have access to view this: the defendant, the lawyer, and expert witnesses. But might there not be reason for a lay witness to have to view it? Let me give you the following hypothetical. Let us say the question is whether this was the material that the defendant had or possessed. There may be a lay witness who's key to the defense who would have to view it. Should we not add something to the effect of lay witnesses as well?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, well, it would violate the federal statute is the first answer I would give. And if it's essential to the defense, then that's going to override this provision anyway. If it's essential to a fair defense for the defendant, then that's a constitutional dimension, which is going to override this court rule and the federal statute anyway. So, and I can't really conceive of a situation where a lay witness is going to have to examine the physical pictures or the actual depictions themselves, well, and not just the hard drive or the computer.
Yes, Representative Grunberg.
Examining something, because there may be a question of whether these were the documents or whatever, the images that the defendant viewed, and it may be that the defendant would have a lay witness who was an eyewitness and said, no, this was not what he had. I mean, I can see that as this very simple hypothetical.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I'm not sure at the pretrial stage where that access would be accomplished at that point. Having a lay witness examine the materials at that time, that would normally be dealt with. So if the state was putting on their case in chief, or they were.
Thank you, Jerry. So you support the amendment, Representative Grunberg, and you're just questioning whether there should be amended language to the amendment to include others. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you wish to? I'm going to oppose the amendment to the amendment. Do you wish to offer an amendment to amendment number 12? I support amendment number 12. I do not support amending number 12. Do you wish to offer an amendment to the amendment?
If I may.
Yes.
Your interpretation, Mr. Lawcock.
I wish I could leave with you, Sandy. Have a good afternoon. Sorry. Stream of consciousness. Sorry. Representative Grunberg.
Boy, that was a softball. Mr. Lawcock, it's your interpretation that unless it's interpreted to allow examination, where this is a key issue in the defense, this would not be, applying it so narrowly it would deny the right for a lay witness to view it in a confrontation of the situation where it's preparation would be unconstitutional, then I would say, should we not put something in so that it wouldn't have a, we wouldn't have a constitutional challenge.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, is going to have to amount to a constitutional anyway, because the supremacy clause would apply. The federal law would apply and say we can't release this material to that person.
Thank you, Mr.
It's going to have to arise to a constitutional argument anyway to get
thank
to that
you.
Point.
Thank you, Mr. Rogoff. Do you wish to offer an amendment to the amendment?
No.
Thank you. I remove my objection to amendment number. Mr. Sabani.
Just a quick comment about it.
Yes, sir.
And I have no problem with the way it's structured, except where it talks about it, the prosecutor and the prosecutor's office, line 12. I would ask you to consider including law enforcement with the evidence locker. We, like as you heard from the public defender last maybe that was, I'm sorry you didn't hear that. But we try not to keep these things in our office. We try to keep them locked up in law enforcement offices.
I see. So if I understand then, Mr. Sabani, you would like the committee to offer an amendment to the amendment that would narrow where?
No, expand, I believe.
To
expand from not only prosecutor's facility to prosecutors or law enforcement.
All right. So, Representative Holmes, I'd like to, can I keep that?
Mm-hmm.
So, I would like to offer an amendment to amendment number 12 on line 12 after the word prosecution facility that would insert the phrase or law enforcement. Look up.
Insert or law enforcement after prosecution.
Yeah, before facility.
All right, so the conceptual amendment to amendment would be or law enforcement.
Mr. Chairman.
Following prosecution on line 12.
Following prosecution.
It would be between prosecution and facility, Mr. Chairman, so it would read at a prosecution or law enforcement facility.
Okay, I see. I see. So prosecution or law enforcement facility. Is that clear, Susan? Sorry about that. So that would be the amendment to the amendment. Is there an objection?
No.
Seeing no objection, we have amendment number 12 before us. I withdrew my objection to amendment number 12. Seeing no other objections, amendment number 12 passes. Thank you. All right, so we now have amendment number 13 is before us. It's by Representative Gruenberg.
I will not offer.
With amendment number 13 is withdrawn.
Good timing.
So we now have amendment number 14 before us. And amendment number 14 is by Representative Gatto, and it's A.21. All right, let me just give members the lay of the land here. It's 5 minutes to three. Representative Dalston, we're going to lose you in 5 minutes. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
14.
Yeah. This is amendment number 14.
Got it.
We have before us amendment number 14 by Representative Gatto, and then we also will be coming back to amendment number, was it 9? Was that was it 8 or 9?
It was 8.
Amendment number 8. All right. So we have amendment number 14, and then we will have amendment number 8 before us, and presumably those are all of the amendments that we're going to see to Bill 298. So, Representative Gatto, amendment number 14, please. Would you move the amendment?
Move amendment number 14.
All right. And
I'll object, Mr.
And Representative
Chairman.
Holmes objects for the purposes of discussion.
And we have talked about not wanting sex offenders to come to Alaska. And, in fact, this amendment actually encourages them to not come here and also to leave here because of the new language on page 2, starting with line 17. Is that they would have to post a sign indicating that they are a sex offender. This stems from people in neighborhoods who have said, I had no idea, two houses away from me. Well, I think this corrects that. Actually, just to add one more piece of information, it simply allows a judge the discretion to require the posting of the sign. It's not a requirement.
I will. I'll tell you the difficulty that I have with it, and I haven't made up my mind how I would vote on this. When Senator Bundy and I traveled to Little Rock, Arkansas, a number of years ago. The difficulty with sex offenders often is they have no place to live. And one of the unique characteristics about sex offenders, according to this conference that we went to, I'm not trying to stereotype for better or for worse, any groups of people, is that sex offenders often are reasonably normal in their other capacities, and they have this one flaw. And unlike rapists, who often retire out of rape, sex offenders can be 80 years old and still offending. And what we learned at this conference is that when you make it less possible for them to have a stable place to live, this is just the devil's advocate argument to what you're proposing, that you then take somebody who can function in society with this major exception, and you then insert a variable of instability by making it impossible for them to live in other places once you separate them from what they're already are separated from by statute, you know, schools and other places where they're not allowed to gather. And so one of the hazards with this amendment is that it introduces more instability into these lives, which makes them more likely to be criminal in another fashion. The second one is the likelihood of harm being done to people who have been convicted of a crime and are now serving. And so it, I just wanted to point out, you know, I'm pretty tough on law and order, you know, I think in this committee, but it's measured, I think, even though I get it.
And Mr. Chair, it's the judicial discretion where probably on your first offense you get this big warning, we're going to let you live in this neighborhood, but and on your second try you're posting signs. And I think this is an amendment not so much in favor of the offender but the offended,
except that it leaves a lot of discretion to the judges, and I'm not certain that one judge that there's any the same standard applies. You know, we have judges in the community of Fairbanks, Superior Court judges, that have, you know, different reputations for, different grades of conviction for different crimes. And in most cases, I'm delighted with those that default to the more harsher penalty. And I'm not certain that I want to give that discretion to a judge. Other thoughts from members?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I agree with what you've said, but for me, you know, we talk about stability of the offender. I have to take the other side of that and look at the stability of the person who has been offended. And because there is discretion there in the courts, and because there are differing levels of sexual abuse, I would vote for this amendment.
Representative Holmes?
I didn't know. Again, you would do what?
I would vote for it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm, like you, struggling with the back and forth, and I think another thing that's popping into my head on this is sex offender may not be the only person living in that home or apartment. You might have family members or roommates or other people who now have this sign in front of their house as well, and you can't tell which one it is. I guess I'm uncomfortable voting for this at this point without thinking about it a little bit more and the ramifications.
I struggle with it myself. I mean, I have rules when I'm campaigning. You know, I don't knock on a door that says no solicitors.
Right.
And I don't knock on a door that says beware of dogs, for obvious reasons.
And on that point,
yes.
I don't, you know, I check who's a sex offender registered. I don't put a sign there. The yard sign does not go there.
Right.
Everybody has their different.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's interesting because if you found, for instance, that a male sex offender could find as a safe place a home with three other grown men. And then we have removed a sex offender from, you know, an area that's near a school, for instance, and we've found a place where they can live safely and quietly and in a program, but then they put at risk the other people that live there or in a multi or in a multi-family building. And I'm struggling with this myself. Representative Gatto.
Just last night I was watching Dateline NBC, and where they have a 13-year-old advertised on the internet, and these guys, they just come in droves. 21 people came in the course of that one program. I think it's reasonable to say, I think it drives them out, I do, and I think they should be driven out. I'm more concerned about the moms and the dads and the siblings of children in the neighborhood. They always want to know. First of all, it reduces the value of their property when there's a sex offender next door. Secondly, it scares the living daylights out of the moms.
Let me ask a question. Mr. Luckup, can you pop up here for a second, please? Mr. Luckup, we have spent some time talking about aggravators. Aggravators generally apply to those criminals who do something that's especially despicable. Is there a way to offer an amendment to this that provides the judges with a little more guideline than just at their discretion? That, for instance, would make this at the discretion of judges for those who have committed a sex offense crime and an aggravator. Is that, Representative Gatto, does that make sense that we're trying to pick out, that we're trying to do a little finer filtering for the judicial branch?
So many times we can't set the language. We have to leave it up to all the different circumstances that apply. For instance, in a multi-unit house, it doesn't go in front of a 12-plex and says sex offender lives here. It goes on their door.
How do we know? Because who puts the sign up there? The maintenance man?
That, I think, you'd leave up to regulations of who puts it up. If you're required to post a sign and you don't, that certainly happens, but you're the violator of the law. We just set the law. We don't do the enforcement. Someone else does.
Anyway, can you answer my question, Mr. Luckup?
Mr. Chairman, you could limit it to aggravated sex offenses, which are the things that require lifetime registration in Alaska. That would be one way to limit it. There's certainly, this is a little different than what Alaska allows a sex offender database from the first day it was adopted, anyone to access it at any time, which was different than basically every other state that adopted a sex offender database. You had tiered offenders in the other states, and you could only get access to the more dangerous offenders in their database. And we've added a bunch of provisions, and someone's selling a house, the realtor has to direct people to the sex offender database and say, you should look on the sex offender database to see if there's any reasons you don't want to buy this house or something. We've added a bunch of those provisions to get people to use the database, as Representative Lynn was talking about, instead of relying upon a sign in the front yard. But this is certainly something that a few judges in Texas and Florida have been using this year. It started this year. It's been a new concept. So.
Thank you. It's 5 minutes past three. We're going to lose Representative Dahlstrom. Representative Gatto, I'm interested in your amendment number four, but not in the way that it's presently constructed. And I'd prefer to do some work on it so that I could vote comfortably vote yes for it. And it's a little rigorous for me right now.
Just a question, Mr. Luckup. When we sent this to you, I believe it required that the sex offense had to be a sex offense committed on a minor. The victim of the crime in question was a minor at the time the act was perpetrated and lives in a single-family home, multiplex, etc.
I don't remember that part. I think it had to do with sex offense, but I could be wrong. It was a rather rushed amendment.
So what I'd like to do is we have two amendments. We have amendment number 8, and we got Kathy Monfreda that's going to want to help us when we next take this up, and then we also have the issues surrounding amendment number 14. And so, for your benefit, Representative Gotti, you've got a chair who would like to vote with you, but it's a little too vigorous for me in its current format. I don't know how other members are around this table. What I'd like to do is I'd like to adjourn for the day and have members do a little bit of independent study so that instead of this consuming an hour of our meeting on Wednesday, that we can move through amendment number 8 and 14 with a minimum amount of discussion, because we have a lot of work for the committee to take up. But neither of these issues are modest. And number 8, again, is the constitutional issue of if you move from another state to this state, can we retroactively slap a larger look-back on you in order to create conforming statute for the state of Alaska? And number 14 is pretty self-explanatory. So with that, at Representative Grunberg.
Just something for Representative Gatto and the rest to consider. In East Anchorage, we've had a guy in his car picking up little kids. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to put up signs on houses, should we be putting signs on a car?
Oh, no. Oh.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Mr. Chair, don't you think, Representative Grunberg, that once they arrest that man, that his car will be impounded and he'll be in jail and his car won't be an issue?
It's an interesting.
We could have an ex-offender.
It's an interesting discussion, but what I'm saying is that when we meet on Wednesday, rather than to have a robust debate about this, which could take an hour, I'd like to just move through it as an objective piece of statute and have us move to vote on it quickly. At 5 minutes after 3, we're adjourned.